Hello, Air Cargo fans. This is Jeffrey Arend, and welcome to today's Flying Talkers. We're glad you're here. Bill Spohr has done about as much as anyone that you've ever met to lift organized air cargo. He did that when he served as CEO of Miami-based Challenge Air Cargo. Maybe you remember Challenge. Very, very interesting airline. Flew 757s in an all-cargo version. Took off like they were going to go to the moon or something. Lots of fun, that company. Had a B-707. People like Walter Atkinson. Left his Continental Airlines cargo job to sit in the left seat and fly around in this grumpy old airplane and carry cargo. It was such an interesting company. But Bill did more. He became a driving force of the great air cargo enterprise and landed four square behind a new idea for a trade show called Air Cargo Americas, and also helped lift the comeback of TIAA. That's right, Bill was instrumental in doing more than just running his own company and doing his own business. He worked for the community, he worked for the industry, and was a hell of an interesting guy. Well, today he's living quietly in Florida with his wife, Lynn, and Bill is smiling his way toward 91 years of age in just about 4 months. We'll have the rest of the story right after this. Once again, welcome to today's Flying Talkers. Hey, we're glad you're here. Flying Talkers podcast brought to you today by your friends at Pay Cargo, the better way to pay and to save time and money. You see, Pay Cargo has a better idea. By simplifying the payment process to more than 3,000 vendors, cargo moves faster. Pay Cargo saves you time and money by expediting important data and funds to ensure rapid release of your cargo. Maybe best of all, you get the time to build your business assured that the Pay Cargo team is with you, providing trackable, tangible results every step of the way. So why wonder why most shipments in the Pay Cargo system get released in as little as 1 hour? Go to www.paycargo.com and explore a whole new way to pay and get paid. Pay Cargo offers flexible payment options and also available credit lines. And as the number one online platform in the world for cargo payments, www.paycargo.com can offer you a level of service, financial expertise, and connectivity that makes it easy to ship, click, and pay. So go to www.paycargo.com and get the rest of the story. Discover how Pay Cargo simplifies a better way to pay and get paid. And tell them Flying Talkers sent you. That's www.paycargo.com. Great people to do business with. We're back, and today, it's about Bill Spohr. Well, Bill doesn't get around much anymore, but we can recall some things from a lifetime of our coverage, including the 18 years he labored as the boss of a dynamic air cargo enterprise, Challenge Air Cargo. Truth be told, what Bill has done with his life is a stirring and inspiring story for the ages. Bill Spohr has traveled extensively on the high road to adventure. The story has the excitement and immediacy of a Zane Grey novel, straight out of the history he helped create. Zane Grey, of course, wrote Riders of the Purple Sage. A lot of Western stuff. In fact, there's a shirt in Robert Redford's catalog for Sundance called the Zane shirt. A little bit about Zane Grey. Fly the ocean in a silver plane. See the jungle when it's wet with rain. You know, Bill has done both, and he's done that many, many times. Okay, maybe a lot of people have done that. But his life, Bill's, has been within the reach of the air cargo industry for the past 60 years. When Gentleman Bill Sporer came upon the scene at Miami International Airport, air cargo operations were dominated by the likes of Pan American, Slick Airways, Eastern, and National Airlines. When he left 23 years ago, having sold his airline that he founded, Challenge Air, to UPS, Bill had, among other things, transformed what was Corrosion Corner. Some people called it Cockroach Corner, less kind. Once upon a time at Miami, there was a collection of old Curtiss C-46s. Those were the hump airplanes that flew over the Himalayas, carrying avgas and tires and things like that to the Flying Tigers from Assam, India to Kunming, China. The well-known DC-3s, Lockheed Constellations, and other itinerant at that point, and even more mysterious aircraft, which shifted uneasily with the tide of a cargo construction boom at the airport, and they kind of moved in and out every night on little cat's feet. Corrosion Corner, situated, as I said, at the northwest corner of the field, is where in the early afternoon, nacelles for reciprocating piston engines were strewn about the hardstand as mechanics feverishly labored under the intense South Florida sun, patching up dogged old sky wagons for one more assignment as air cargo carriers down south. During the dark, early morning hours, while everyone else slept, Corrosion Corner Miami was wide awake, like 12 o'clock high, with cargo on the move. Here, loadmasters barked out instructions in Spanish to ground crews as half-century-old cranky, sputtering engines came to life. Later, a parade of vintage aircraft moved slowly away like silver ghosts, glinting in the moonlight, laughing and throating growls at having once more cheated a nearby crane that relentlessly eyed the action, ready to chop up the less fortunate. I believe that was some time in the history of airport cargo business, and it was the most colorful gateway anywhere. I mean, there were some pretty good ones in Latin America, but this place had it all going on. Today in 2022 at Miami International Airport, where a colorful and rich part of airport history and legend are recalled, there stands this giant around-the-clock automated refrigerator in that corner, surrounded by the streamlined cladding of a modern air cargo facility. It's a giant reefer, masquerading as a cargo terminal emblazoned with the name UPS as a center point, created by, well, you guessed it, Bill Sporer, for what today is an integral entire string of buildings, more commonly called the Cool Chain. Well, Bill was too cool for school. Very early, he saw the handwriting on the wall and ramped up the Challenge Air Cargo Terminal into a new landmark for air shippers at Miami International Airport. He set the pace. Miami, of course, owes much of its standing in the world of air cargo to the shipment of perishables. That place moves more perishables than all other airports in the USA combined. So UPS, known for having an eye for a good thing, decided to make a big entry into South America, adding service to a couple of dozen destinations served by Challenge, and in the process got the big automatic reefer operation located at one corner of MIA as part of the bargain. Well, after the purchase, Bill stayed on with UPS team for a while, worked things in with the new owners, and to basically show them the ropes in Latin America. After all, the man did have the plan, and he was well-known and respected everywhere. You know, Bill is able to speak several languages, including French and Spanish, but he also knows the Latin American market like the back of his hand. But eventually, it was time to move on, so post-Challenge, small bed and breakfast interest up in the panhandle area of Florida provided some focus in another area, plus an exercise in broadened horizons, not to mention a respite from aviation. But Bill had always been an explorer. He enjoyed discovery, not from an armchair, but out in the wild, where the challenge is in your face and real. I recall when we were assembling our landmark 250-page book on the history of Miami International Airport nearly 40 years ago, we learned that Bill once spent 3 months exploring the Mosquito Coast of Honduras. There have also been other multi-month interludes in Bill Spohr's life, including an early latch-up with Eugene Fodor, the guidebook guy. Bill traveled all over South America, creating the first truly great descriptive guide of the continent. But let's back up a little bit and look at Bill as a young man. He was tutored in the Latin American airline game first by legendary Lowell Yurix, who founded the TACA chain of airlines during the 1930s, and later by C.N. Shelton, who took on mighty Panagra with his tan barefoot airlines, providing service down the west coast of South America, much in the same fashion that Southwest and JetBlue operate low-cost airlines today. But when the music stopped at Miami International Airport, the UPS job completed, Bill reached back across decades to make a sentimental journey back to Saigon. We'll have that right after this. Today's Flying Talkers is brought to you by Colli Logistics. When it comes to keeping things moving, it's Colli, by golly. The global air cargo industry is a sunrise sector. You don't believe that? Look out at the ramp. There are thousands of airplanes carrying nothing but air cargo these days, where in past years it was in the belly, or maybe it wasn't there at all. The volume of air cargo being moved ever-increasing, and airports are finding it difficult to keep pace with expansion in terms of infrastructure, workforce, and level of automation. An end-to-end web-based air freight software or an air cargo management system can assist cargo terminal operators to address these issues. At Colli Logistics Solutions, we understand these issues well and constantly strive to provide solutions that can address these problems, promising improvement and efficiency of the operation, as well as increasing bottom line results. Colli Logistics Solutions' suite of air freight software solutions to address the challenges of air cargo stakeholders have stemmed from working alongside leading airports, including Atlanta, Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport, and other locations around the world, gaining in-depth understanding of the challenges and opportunities that define the air cargo domain. Colli's flagship air cargo management system provides state-of-the-art technology for modernization and streamlining of air cargo operations that could assist all stakeholders in overcoming the challenges. Yes, today in 2021, it's Colli, by golly. Back to Gentleman Bill, is 90 in the shade. Well, Bill reached back after the challenge experience, 18 years, and his dogged daily work to advance air cargo via Miami. He reached back to take a sentimental journey to Saigon, Ho Chi Minh City, trip to Vietnam, where he had served as aide-de-camp in 1954 to the American Advisory Group commander there. Whether he got out of that place after Dien Bien Phu or before, I'm not sure. Forgot to ask him about that. But boy, ever since I left there myself, where I served for 13 months. That was the government-sponsored tour of duty to that place. And then the shooting stopped. I've wanted to go back there. Someday, maybe I will. But his story certainly rekindles some memories. Once again to Southeast Asia, Gentleman Bill moved about Saigon, looking for what might be left or ever became of an era out of Graham Greene's book, The Quiet American. Back to the main streets of that beautiful and still intriguing city, where Bill and his lovely wife and alter ego Lynn set up headquarters in the antebellum Hotel Continental, with its big slow-motion ceiling fans and French and American expatriate cafe society. Lots of other people there too, I might add. Bill said, quote, "I just want to see if I could remember the places and times of nearly 50 years ago." Well, Bill told me this a while ago, so you'll understand the time frame. A last journey of discovery, most lovely to recall, had Gentleman Bill and two companions, lifelong friends, on an extended trip of discovery down the mighty Amazon River in Brazil. He said, "You hear about the Amazon River as images of jungles and swamp wild areas are conjured by the name," Bill said. That trip took place, I guess, 20 years ago. "The truth is that the Amazon that we think we know is nothing at all like the reality of traveling through an area as big as Montana and California. Our trip began in Manaus. Our mode was one of the hundreds of three-deck riverboats that stand for transportation in that part of the world. The three of us, one of the men was a travel writer who was 87 at the time, we boarded this quite plain but clean and well-kept riverboat, not unlike a big sidewheeler on the Mississippi, of course minus the sidewheel. We rode first class on the top deck, which cost a grand total of $18 a day, and that included meals. Of course, you needed to bring your own hammock, which is strung up at night, so for sleeping, of course. Bathroom facilities were exactly one unit for the boys and another one for the girls. Meals were rice and beans with either pork or chicken. But you know something? We had a great time of it. We were traveling with native Brazilians who lived throughout the area as they moved from town to town on the river," Bill said. "The local people are for the most part quite poor. However, the civility that was evident between everybody aboard our boat as we moved on the Amazon was remarkable. There just was never a voice above normal decibel. Despite the close quarters, everyone was just great," Bill Sporer said. "My colleagues wrote, we read books, and we generally got off and on the boat at every opportunity to explore a dozen small villages along the way. We saw jungle, but we also saw high cliffs and bluffs, ridges, and foliage reminiscent of manicured English gardens at various stages of our journey. But for 3 weeks," Bill Sporer said, "not one person we encountered spoke a single word of English. I must admit, the contrast to everyday life was quite wonderful, not to mention the learning curve for advancing my use of the beautiful Portuguese language," Bill Sporer said. "I also managed to learn something else. For years, more than I can count, I've been stuffing aircraft full of freight. But when I stood wide-eyed and saw how these river traders on the Amazon stuff dripping, oozing crocodile skins into the lower holds of the riverboats, I felt like a kid in school again. Now that kind of work is the real cargo business, unadorned and right down to cases. Imagine what the people who go into those holds to retrieve the shipment of skins have to be made of, considering conditions after the skins have been packed away there for a couple of days." That's what Bill Sporer said about that trip. And like we said at the top, Gentleman Bill made easy work on a discovery. Although that life is in the past, it's grand to recall an air cargo pioneer talking about challenging the Amazon River, a couple of decades ago, and now he has lived long enough to see an air cargo company named Amazon on top of the world, with 400,000 drivers worldwide, 40,000 semi-trucks, 30,000 vans, yada, 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 and a fleet of more than 70 all-cargo aircraft. There's something tremendously uplifting about gentleman Bill Spohr. He is unique of all the people that we've ever met in our years covering air cargo. What his life, so well lived, that thankfully continues today, tells all of us is that there is always a reason to explore new horizons or visit old haunts and enrich our appreciation of history. Well, I was hanging around with him, just like Mike, was an oft-heard rephrase by our kids and people in the media paying tribute to the great basketball star who we always think about during March Madness going on right now, Michael Jordan. For me, I'm hoping for a week, a river, and if allowed a hammock when it's 90 in the shade, for me, to be just like Bill. Keep on keeping on, dear friend. Keep 'em flying. This is Jeffrey Aaron. This Flying Talkers podcast is brought to you by ATC, the Air Force, in global GSSAs. ATC Aviation Services stationed its America's team at Air Cargo Americas in March, the Show and Supply Chain Americas Conference in Miami, to extend effusive and continual thanks to its service partners and business colleagues for their close cooperation during the past 2 years in its pandemic. We noted Philip Thierman, Regional Cargo Manager, South America, and Mark Thierman, Regional Director, South America, and Timothy File, President and Managing Director, USA, and Renee Weinberger, Director of Brazil, standing in a stand, sitting in a booth, whatever you want to call it. It was great to see so many of our friends, customers, in person and share the unique experiences of 2021. Stand there, taking the conversation, taking the suggestions, and thanking everyone. Air cargo, ATC says, is an industry that soars with face-to-face contact. So Air Cargo America's quality time helped everyone to continue generating new and old friendships through understanding and camaraderie, spirited turnout, and lots of catching up during the show. Here are the greatest transportation people in the world, exclaimed Mark Thierman. ATC, one world, one great GSSA. I thought I'd spend a couple of minutes here trying to remember what happened to all those airplanes when Corrosion Corner was renovated out of existence, modernized for the modern air cargo business. A lot of the old airplanes ended up over in Fort Lauderdale. By way of background, I used to be a music critic, and I used to write about all kinds of things aside from air cargo. So I wanted to learn the cargo business because I loved aviation. My dad was a pilot, all the rest of it. So I figured the way to learn about air cargo was to live air cargo. Start a newspaper, talk to people that were in cargo terminals, and make that the content that we ran. So for the past 50 years, it's been about people, their lives, what's going on in cargo terminals and that sort of thing. Yeah, forward thinking. Okay, that's all fine. But I wanted to follow these old airplanes. Wanted to see where they went. Wanted to know where they came from. What a romantic era that was, and how exciting it was to see them still pushing back with cargo. But they kept disappearing and disappearing. Now I guess they're all gone. Anywhere the government used to love to run out and check these airplanes to make sure they were not filled with contraband coming or going. And if they did find some contraband, they put them in a pen. They had one over in Fort Lauderdale behind a little diner. So I'm out delivering papers in Fort Lauderdale. I drive over there just to go up and down the line. Did the same thing in Miami. I go up and down the line of these old cargo terminals next to railroad tracks that were put in World War II when Miami had a place called MIAD, Miami International Airport Depot, where the trains came in, disgorged their freight. Freight moved from there by air down to Brazil, across the South Atlantic, over to Africa, components of war, all sorts of different consignments were moving in that manner. And those buildings that were MIAD buildings were old tin roof hangars. Most delightful place to be in a sudden shower, which I was often in out delivering newspapers, would be in one of those old buildings. Usually I was popping around several cities and sort of getting in my own way, pretty tired. I was learning things, but physically jumping up on those platforms wasn't easy, especially watching out for the little red salamanders that seemed to love to live all over the loading docks there. Never tried to step on them, that's for damn sure. So I would lie down somewhere and take a nap, and the sound of that rain on those tin roofs is something that probably should have recorded and played in my bedchambers these days if I have trouble going to sleep. It was very relaxing. Well, anyway, I got off of the point of being over in Fort Lauderdale because the feds had a pen for airplanes they seized. At one time, they had at least a dozen Lockheed Constellations parked near this little diner where I'd sit and have bacon and eggs in the morning after I go out and deliver the papers. My favorite view, though, was this 747 from Avianca with one of those little Caesar signs on a little tiny Caesar, a little red sign by the door. It's a giant airplane, busted. I never have forgotten that view. I think I must have taken a picture of it. One of these days, I'm going to put on my armor and go into my storage area. I'm not brave enough to do it without armor on anymore. There's so much junk in there. See if I can't find that picture and publish it. But that was a great era, and it's, as I say, I can't go back to Miami and not go over to Victor's and have a colada and find somebody over there who, on the Glen Curtis Parkway, that I could talk to about it. So discovering that Bill Sporer is alive and well, I asked his son Patrick, what's he doing? He didn't say much more than, well, he's watching the sunset. So I got to think he's watching the sunrise too. And that's something good to think about. So thanks for joining me, for your time. This time, until next time, this is Jeffrey Aaron saying, keep 'em flying. Keep on sailing, Bill. And be good to each other, will you, folks? Bye.
Speak, Lou. Good, Lou.